Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. We're here.
Hey, thanks for letting us take like you could let us. We call the shots around here. No, just know actually, that like anytime we take time off, it's because there's just
we just
absolutely physically cannot.
Yeah.
We prioritize you guys, and so thanks for hanging in there.
Yes.
And letting us have just a week off to regroup.
Yeah.
We had sicknesses going on. I was sick when we were supposed to record last week, and I did not sound good. I mean, I didn't even sound sexy. I didn't even sound like,
my sticky shoes.
I was like, it was phlegm, and there was coughing.
Like the Rugrats.
And there
what's that? The character's name, Tommy.
Oh, yeah, Tommy. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was coughing so much that tears were just coming out of my eyes. Like,
That's
was just
awful.
It was gross. It wouldn't have been a productive recording session.
No.
I'd have had to, like, spend 5 hours editing that.
But I'm the one that actually said, hey, can we skip? And you're like, actually, that would be nice.
I was like, actually, yeah, because I'm on my deathbed over here. So,
had I not suggested, you might have tried.
I was going to
try. That's how much she loves y'all.
I know.
I just want y'all to know.
I was like, I'll just take a break and cough and then come back to it. But this is better. This is better. Let's just.
Yeah. Thank you for the break.
Yes.
We'll try not to do it much more.
Too much. Yeah. Things are going to get easier for me. I know for things are going to get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. I just know when we get in this house, all the running around, the commuting, like all of that is going to just be 5 minutes.
And then I'll be coming to you.
And then you'll be... You're like 8 minutes away from me. You're
8 minutes.
So close. We should just do a zip line from my house to your house. What do you think?
Okay.
I mean, there's enough like of those big telephone poles we could use that are probably not in use anymore. I mean, who does landlines? Yeah. There's no landlines. I don't know why those things are still up. But it's just going to get, it's going to get easier. I don't know for you, Lena. Maybe not for you.
No, no. I don't see the light.
You don't see
the light?
At the
end of the tunnel, no.
Okay, well.
But we're just going to keep on doing it.
We're just going to keep plugging on.
Yeah.
But yeah, we love telling you guys stories. So.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, what do you got
for
us?
How about we tell a story right now?
Let's tell a story. What do you got for us, Lena? Okay.
So we're going back to 2012.
Okay.
It was March 11th, 2012 in Riverton, Utah.
Okay.
The case started when a man jogging by the Jordan River called 911, urging them to send police out to investigate. As he was jogging along the river's edge, he saw some big rocks that had blood all over them.
Oh, that's chilling.
Yes. And he's like, at first he thought it could be animal blood, but I mean, there was just so much of it. And then he saw a red shoe.
Oh.
So he's like, it was like a Ked tennis shoe, but he knew it just wasn't sitting right in his gut. So he calls police, and as police are investigating, it wasn't long, something like an hour and a half, they found the body of a young girl.
Oh no.
The body was floating on the other side of the river, just down a ways, and she was wearing blue jeans and a red shirt and one red KED tennis shoe. It was the matching shoe to the one that they found. It was apparent that the body had been there for hours. Her face was swollen and looked beaten and bruised. They knew no one would recognize her by her face due to the damage that had been done. The autopsy showed multiple fractures to her face and skull and fluid in her lungs. Police turned to the public for help. They held a press conference giving some details in hopes that someone would know something about this girl. Oh,
that's nice.
Yeah.
Sharing some details. What an idea.
Yeah. Well, a woman was watching TV.
There you go.
And she saw the news, the conference. Her name was Veronica Kasperzak. She calls in and she says she was watching and saw the press conference, and she thinks that the girl found in the water is her 15-year-old daughter.
Oh my God.
Annie Kasperzak.
Oh.
Annie lives with her mother and stepfather, James Bratcher. And that Saturday night, Veronica and James went out to dinner. And when they got back home, Annie opened the door for them. She had a smile on her face, didn't seem like anything was wrong. Veronica went to her room to get a shower, and James sat in the kitchen where Annie was. And James says that Annie went to her bedroom at about 7:45 that Saturday night. At 8:40 p.m., Veronica was talking to her sister on the phone when she thought, I wonder what Annie's doing. I haven't talked to her since we got home. So she went to Annie's room, which was on the second story of the house, the second floor. But Annie was not in her room. It was just an hour since James saw her go to her room. Veronica calls out to James. And when he gets upstairs, he finds a note. I think a report I saw said that the note was on her bed. I don't know. He picked up this note and he shows it to Veronica. And this note is written by Annie.
Oh.
Annie's note stated, I'm sorry, Mom. I made a mistake and lied to you about some things. I'm sorry, but I have to leave. It's not you, it's me. By the time you read this note, I will be on my way to California.
What?
I lied to my friends. I told them I was pregnant, but I only wanted their sympathy. That's why I lied. I feel out of place here, and my only way out is to run away. Please don't try to look for me because I don't want to be found. I love you guys, but I have to go. Bye.
Oh my gosh.
Chilling, right?
And the fact that she just had this fleeting thought, like, I wonder what Annie's up to.
Right.
That's a mother's intuition right there.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
So as soon as they read the note, they called police and reported her as a runaway. Now, this was before the press conference that Saturday night. And they called Annie's boyfriend, Christopher Bagshaw. Christopher tells them he knew nothing of Annie's plan.
Wow.
Veronica spent that Saturday night worried, sick, and not knowing what to do. I mean, Annie just told them she didn't want to be found.
And she's on her way somewhere. Like, maybe when she gets there, she'll call.
Right. But like, maybe she'll change her mind.
This is her choice. Like, right. What do you do?
So that next day is when she saw the news report.
Oh my gosh.
As Veronica was talking to police about it, knowing that her face was too beaten to be recognized, they asked if Annie had braces. Maybe they can identify her with some common things like that. Also, Annie had a little dimple in her chin.
Aww.
And she says, yes, Annie had braces. Aww. Yes, it was Annie. After doing a DNA test, they confirmed that, you know, even further confirmation, it was Annie. Police learned that Annie grew up in a household that was much too difficult for a child, as she would go in between foster homes.
Oh, no.
Veronica was, at the time, Annie's case manager. And when she was a young girl, and they became close. Now, at this time, Veronica was married to a dentist, Kasperzak, and the two of them decided to adopt Annie.
Aww.
And Annie was 9 at this time when they adopted her.
Okay. So she'd been there a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, she had a rough start in life, but she had a family to show her the care and the love that every child deserves and desires. Mm-hmm. And she loved them right back.
Aww.
But she longed to start a life of her own in her young teenage years. Mm-hmm. Detectives came to her home and confiscated the note that Annie left. They took their cell phones and computers. They took a tote full of papers and Annie's journals. Her journal talks a lot about her boyfriend. She wrote and drew his name all over several pages.
Typical 15.
Right. You know, the puppy love. Mm-hmm. We've been there. Mm-hmm. They had been together for about a year and a half. And she had written in her journal about how she wanted to have a baby.
Oh.
Yeah. So when her friends were questioned, they tell authorities that Annie told them that she was pregnant. But the autopsy confirmed Annie's confession in her note to her mom. She mm-hmm. was not pregnant. So they bring Chris in for questioning on mm-hmm. March 14th. And as his father sits in the room with him, they ask when the last time he saw her was. And he says that it was the last Wednesday or Thursday. So that would have been the Wednesday or Thursday before that Saturday
okay.
that she went missing. It was after school, but she had to be home by 6 p.m. And that's the last time he physically saw her.
Okay.
He says the last time that he spoke to her on the phone was Saturday night around 8 p.m.
All right. So like right before she left.
Yes.
Okay.
So she goes up to her room at 7:45. Mm-hmm. He talks to her at 8. That night she called him 4 times, but he says he only talked to her twice out of those 4. Each conversation was about 5 or 6 minutes long. Mm-hmm. In those conversations, Annie tried to convince Chris to run away with her.
Oh.
And he told her that it was a stupid idea and he refused. He told her to think about how her family and her friends would feel. Mm-hmm. He tells them that he only heard of the pregnancy rumor from her friends, not even by Annie.
Wow.
But he did note that she started telling people the rumor of the pregnancy about a month after she had slept with a guy named LJ.
Oh.
And that,
like, she cheated on her boyfriend with this guy?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what he says. And so he tells them that Annie told him, she's confessing this to him. She had LJ sneak into her house one night and they slept together. Chris tells them that the only time that he had sex with Annie was that last time that he saw her at his friend Spencer's house after school that Wednesday or Thursday.
Oh, all right.
So they're together.
So he's like, couldn't have been...
Right.
Couldn't have been me.
Yeah. I find that interesting because mm-hmm. they've been together for a year and a half and they have sex just before she goes missing.
Yeah. I'm like wondering if that was because of him, because she seemed like, I mean, she cheats on him with some guy. It doesn't
right.
seem like she's, I mean, I wouldn't say she's promiscuous. I just don't think she was a prude in right. any way. So maybe it was him that kind of stopped them from.
So we can speculate.
Doing it all that time.
Right.
Or he's lying.
Which one? Which one is it? So he talked about the events of that evening that they were together. She got a bloody nose and it started dripping on his shoes.
Oh.
So he brought this up because
her blood was on his shoe.
Well, I think detectives were like, well, I'll need to take your shoes. And, you know, I think they just were trying to take some things. And he was like, oh, well, just so you know, she got a bloody nose that night and it dripped on my shoe. And so the detectives are like, oh, tell me more.
Yeah, go on.
Tell me more. Okay. So he has Chris tell him as much detail as he can about that episode. He even had Chris draw a map of Spencer's house. I guess this is one of their best friends, Spencer, okay. Chris, and Annie. So he's drawing this map of Spencer's house and the room and where the bathroom was, because he's like, we went to the bathroom to clean up. Spencer was like falling asleep. But just ask him. He'll tell. Mm-hmm. He'll tell you it's no big deal. But okay. You're going to find blood on my shoe.
Okay.
So, So Chris's dad chimes in on the questioning to help give a timeline of what he and Chris were doing that Saturday night. His dad left the house about 6 or 7 p.m. to go out to the bar. And Chris says he stayed at home and played video games for about an hour and a half. And then he went to his grandmother's house. His dad didn't want him staying at home by himself. He was going to have to stay the night at his grandmother's house, which was like 3 doors down from his house. So he plays video games and then he goes, drops off his stuff at his grandma's house. And then he leaves walking down like a mile and a half to a friend's house. Mm-hmm. His friend was at home. So he went back to his grandma's house where he stayed for the rest of the night. His grandma corroborates the story. His dad says, yeah, I got home about 11:30, went over to my mother's house to check on Chris. He was asleep. So I left him there and I went home and went to bed. So his alibi checks out.
Okay.
Next thing detectives do is go to Spencer's house and they search his home and question him. Spencer tells them that on Saturday, he and his older brother went to the gym and he had a 2-hour gym sesh.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah. And he's like telling him, yeah, I don't know why my brother wanted to be at the gym so long. Like, we're not Marines. Like, I thought that was funny. But they got back home about 8:30 and their dad's like, hey, are y'all hungry? You want dinner? And he's like, just so nonchalant, mm-hmm. telling of all of these little details of the night. Mm-hmm. So Spencer let detectives search his phone. They're sitting there questioning him. He confirmed Annie's bloody nose episode. He says, yeah, it happened. Her blood dripped on the shoe. And then he tells them that he had gotten these weird emails from LJ. LJ was emailing Spencer from Annie's email. Like, what? He had hacked into Annie's email and was...
That night?
No, it wasn't that night. It was just like in the days before.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So y'all need to go find out who this LJ guy is. Like, that's all they knew of LJ is that Annie said... She had this relations with LJ and then he's emailing Spencer and they didn't know what he looked like, but mm-hmm. hey, you want to look into this guy.
Interesting.
And so Spencer's in the email, Spencer's like, why are you emailing me from Annie's email? And he's like, oh, I hacked into the email. Anyway, they believed that he was a part of some gang. And they didn't like that Annie was getting caught up in all of that mm-hmm. kind of lifestyle. Anyway, he says that he no longer has this email chain because his phone goes crazy sometimes and it's no longer in his phone. So he was really trying to get his dad to get the phone records. Like, he really was trying to help the mm-hmm. detectives. Like, dad, can you get these records from the phone service? Mm-hmm. There was a voicemail left from an unknown number, but that voicemail had disappeared. That was another thing they tried to get from the phone service. About a week into the investigation, the detectives receive a call from a woman named Joanna Franklin. She tells them that she witnessed Annie's murder,
Oh my gosh.
And she wants to tell them all about it.
Please do.
She tells them that LJ brought that girl, meaning Annie, over to where she lived. She says she's in her bedroom and she heard LJ and Annie doing things in the bathroom. There were two other men at the house named Daniel and Vanua. I'm probably saying that name wrong. Forgive me. Mm. She says Annie laughed at Daniel in front of everyone when he said something provocative to her. He's like, hey, basically like, hey, I want to get some. And she just laughed and she was like, no. Joanna says it made him mad that she laughed at him and he grabbed her face and slammed it into the wall.
Good Lord.
And blood went all over the place.
Jeez.
When they walked outside, LJ and Annie, this Daniel guy, he followed after them and he whacked Annie across the face. And she's like, yeah. And that girl, her face was bleeding and her ears.
Oh my God.
Blood was coming from her ears, her nose, and her mouth. But then Annie went pale white. And that's when they realized that she was dead.
I mean,
that was...
Okay.
Yeah. Joanna reached down to check on Annie. She's like grabbed her chin and Joanna's words were her chin just slid. It moved in a way that it wasn't supposed to move.
Oh my.
She then told Daniel that they needed to take her to the hospital. She's like, we need to get her some help. And he refused. Instead, he demanded that Joanna clean up the blood. The group redressed Annie, dressing her in the red and black t-shirt and the jeans and the red shoes.
Redressed her. Was she not dressed?
I don't know. That's,
maybe she was in her panties and her bra or something?
I don't know. Or maybe because there was blood all over her clothes. Yeah, this girl's just like, in this interview, she's like going 90 to nothing, giving all these details, like telling this dramatic story. So they put her in this outfit. They put her in the back of the car. And Joanna stayed at the house while the three guys, LJ, Daniel, and the other guy, took Annie with them.
Okay.
So when the guys come back, they told her that they took Annie to her house and she's fine. Okay. But she was just pale white and...
bleeding out of all orifices not breathing. Of her face.
But then as... She's hearing other stories and they're not adding up. And by the end of the conversation, the guys told her that, you know, Annie, she went swimming and she's not coming back. So now police want to talk to LJ and Daniel. Daniel, by the way, was a convicted felon. I'm from Texas. and he was a gang member. Chris and Spencer already told detectives that they thought LJ was in a gang, but they still couldn't find LJ.
Hmm.
Detectives go to Daniel's home and the place is disheveled.
Ugh. Well, I mean...
There's an obvious sign of an attempt to clean up.
Mm-hmm.
The walls had just been painted and the carpet in the hallway had been removed. red marks like blood stains were on the wall. Police arrested Daniel.
Well, I'll say.
And when talking to him, they show him a picture of Annie. And he's like, oh, that's Brittany. And they tell him, no, it's Annie. And he's like, no, it's Brittany. And he's like, they went back and forth like, no, it's Annie. But hey, you might know her as Brittany. Mm-hmm. He says, did something happen to her? I hope not, because she was really cool.
Oh, please.
And he starts offering random information saying, oh, yeah, she lives with Sal and she's friends with Mercedes. And yeah, she was at my house the other day. It sounds like he's playing so dumb.
Right.
Going as far as to say he doesn't know who LJ is. Or was he playing dumb? In my opinion, in the interview, he really sounded like... He was genuinely confused. He really thought this girl was Brittany.
Really?
Then he basically says, if y'all think I did something to her, I need a lawyer. But he kept talking and they're like, detectives even asked him, okay, but you're still talking. Right. Are you like, if you want a lawyer, we got to go get you a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask him if Joanna got mad about LJ and Annie doing stuff in their house. And he's like, huh? No, I don't know anything about that.
Hmm.
So eventually the DNA test from the samples taken from Daniel's home did not match any of, it didn't match Annie's blood.
What?
Yeah. Very
weird.
Very weird. Also, his phone records showed him nowhere close to the area, close to the Jordan River where Annie was found.
Weird.
Detectives bring Joanna back in.
And they're like, you got some splaining
to do. Yeah, like, you gave us this whole story. Yeah. What's going on? Like, okay, he's not giving up any information. Right. Help.
He seems a bit confused. Yeah.
Well, Joanna, she breaks and she's like, actually, I was lying. None of that happened.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
You see, Daniel had taken advantage of her and cut her off of her drug supply.
Oh, there it is.
And so to get back at him, she looked up all of the details of Annie's case and she could find, and she concocted this story that she told police. But it wouldn't just be to get revenge on Daniel. Joanna had a criminal background of things related to drugs and credit card theft.
Of course she did.
Before she gave them this whole made up story, she asked that her charges be dropped in exchange of her witness statement. How evil.
Wait, what about the blood and stuff at his house?
Yeah, what about it?
Wait. And the carpet being pulled it up all, and everything.
Isn't that interesting how that all matched up? Something happened there.
Weird.
So yeah, she thought she could get immunity for her crimes in her twisted way of thinking. She really thought this would work.
Wow.
But Daniel, to kind of answer your question here, Candace, he did have an alibi, which was confirmed. You see, he couldn't have been involved in Annie's case because he was with a friend that night committing another crime.
Oh.
A kidnapping.
And oh, Lord.
Yeah, I didn't find any information as to what that whole story was and what that entailed, but.
That's serious.
Yeah. Could something have happened with that kidnapping at his house?
Right.
And it just matched up.
And you know, like, kidnapping that could also be considered taking, you know, an underage person.
True.
If they're willing to go with you and their parents say,
okay, right.
You know, like, so maybe it was a kidnapping, or maybe it was a little more innocent than that. Cause why wasn't he in jail for that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, I didn't find
so
any information.
Weird.
Yeah.
Well, great alibi though.
Yeah.
Committing another crime.
Yeah, I couldn't have done that because I was I was kidnapped. I didn't murder nobody, but I did
kidnap somebody.
I'm not sure if Joanna got in trouble for obstructing justice, but she absolutely should have because it threw detectives off.
I was about to say, that's a lot of wasted time.
Yes.
Resources.
Yeah. Absolutely. So through the next year, they were thrown off course and had to figure out how to get back on the path.
Right.
And they did get some other tips along the way. One was from a person that saw a male on a bike leaning over the south side barrier of the bridge at the river. The woman who saw this male thought he was actually going to fall in. He was leaning so far. Another tip was at 2:30 p.m. the day of the murder, the tipster saw a young male. He was short and had dark hair that was at about ear length. He was wearing a gray shirt and blue shorts. As they passed him, he's talking to himself, kind of chanting, won't get caught, won't get caught.
Oh,
and
man.
He's waving his arms around.
Oh, that's weird.
Right? That would stick out.
I mean... It's like, why didn't you say something about that like sooner?
Yeah. Christopher, Annie's boyfriend, called in and said that he had been receiving threats from LJ, but they didn't know how to find LJ. Looking through Annie's phone records, they see that she had received a few calls on the night that she was murdered from a blocked number. Was it LJ? When researching Annie's and Chris's phone records, detectives found something really interesting.
Go on.
The blocked calls that Annie received were from Christopher.
Oh. LJ's not real.
He's not real.
Mm.
You're so smart.
I've cracked the case.
2014, detectives call Spencer to have another chat.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, he says he saw Annie had this nosebleed.
Mm-hmm.
He now says he never actually saw Annie have the nosebleed. Chris told him that it had happened. And so after Chris was questioned by police, he even texts, there's a text on Chris's phone to Spencer saying, hey, I don't want you to lie for me, but can you tell them that Annie got a bloody nose and it dripped on my shoe? So, yeah.
You might have to be in a really weird position to have your bloody nose drip on somebody else's shoe. Right?
Yeah. And so that's why detectives at that time were like, okay, how are y'all sitting?
Yeah,
and,
making out?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. They talked to Christopher's grandmother once again. Remember, he was supposed to be staying the night with her that night. And she said Christopher had arrived at her house at 7:45 and he stayed there all night. And remember, his dad said Chris was asleep on the couch at his grandmother's house at 11:30. But phone records show that his grandmother called Christopher's phone several times through the night.
What?
If he was at her house, why is she calling him several times?
Why is she lying?
And it's even into the midnight hours she's calling
him. Oh my gosh. Wait, and his dad really saw him there on the couch, or he's just saying that?
They're just lying. They lied.
Oh, no, no, no.
Now she tells police that, well, he did leave the house and he came back around 1 or 1:30 in the morning. What was he doing?
They better slap them with charges. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I don't think that happened.
Oh.
Detectives traced the phone locations to everyone's phone data. And by the time of this questioning, 2 years after Annie's murder, Christopher had since moved to Colorado.
Oh, is that right?
And this time, when they brought him back in, he broke and he told the truth.
Wow.
He tells them how Annie made up this LJ character to make Chris jealous, and he, in turn, used LJ as an opportunity to throw detectives off of him as a suspect. So I think that is true. She really did tell him that there's this guy named LJ, and he's like, oh, perfect.
Right.
Christopher's bike matched the description of the one that the tipster called in and said that they saw. Christopher also had long ear length hair. Police also found a note in the trash can at Chris's home. I know I keep saying Chris and Christopher. I'm sorry. I don't know when they found this note. This was confusing to me, but they found this note in the trash can at his house, and it had a description of what Annie wore the night that she was murdered, along with a detailed timeline of the events.
Okay.
So I guess in a way it was his confession just written down.
Interesting.
I don't know. The smoking gun was the call that Veronica made to Christopher looking for Annie that night. Detectives were able to trace that call to the exact location to where Annie was found, proving that Chris was there.
Wow.
They still didn't have the full story. However, Chris was charged with first degree murder and obstruction of justice. It was later when he confessed to another inmate that he had killed Annie. Wow. because he heard the claims that he was telling everyone that she was pregnant with his baby. And he really thought that the rumors were true, and he was not happy about it. I mean, he was 14 at the time.
Oh, my good Lord.
And he didn't want to be a dad.
Well, then keep it in your pants.
Yeah. And right. So, and actually later, he would also say that he was under the influence of, I think, marijuana. He was, okay. He had done some drugs and was just not in his right mind, mm-hmm. which was probably true.
Okay.
And actually, Annie's journal entry on March 1st talks about Chris finding out about the pregnancy rumor, which mm-hmm. I find interesting. Like I said earlier, if they had been together for so long.
Yeah.
And then only had sex once.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been his baby. So what is he so afraid of? Anyway, that's a moot point.
So by that now. Wasn't true.
Yeah. That, I mean, we know that's just him distancing himself.
Right.
Anywho, this inmate told police what Christopher told him, telling them that when Annie begged him to run away with her, he told her, okay, just meet me at the bridge by the Jordan River. Man. He hit her in the face with a shovel. He then put the shovel on Annie's forehead and jumped on it until
my
she stopped.
Oh, God.
Yeah, until she stopped moving.
Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh my good Lord.
What's even more disturbing is that he posted on Annie's Facebook just after the murder.
No, he didn't.
Stating, everyone wear red tomorrow. It was her favorite color. Let's show her how much we really care.
Ew.
What? Another post that he said in summary, the world is filled with hate. It's sad what happened to Annie, and I don't know why anyone would do this to her. She was awesome, and we all loved her. Even though we had times where we disliked each other, we always made up. Like, he's just posting
this. That's such a 14-year-old.
Well, true. Very good point.
That is just...
Yeah, but he knows what he's doing.
And this is what shocks me about him. How old did you say he was when he confessed?
17.
So 17.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm shocked by that. I'm shocked that he... Maybe it is that he had all that time for True. It to torment him, but to carelessly and so easily lie mm-hmm. like that at 14 years old.
Yes.
That's so deviant.
Yes.
And to keep it for so long.
I know.
Why did he confess?
Well, I mean.
I mean, it's great that he did. I mean, I'm glad he did.
Maybe he just realized the detectives are just going to keep coming back.
Right.
And I'm not going to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't keep lying. I don't know. Maybe that's what he was thinking.
That's interesting to me.
So even though he was arrested at 17 years old, and he was only 14 at the time of the murder, he pled guilty and received 15 years to life. 15 years to life in prison. And he is eligible for parole in 2034. Chris did give a statement where he apologized to Annie's family as well as his family, saying, I'm sorry I did this. Annie's family got to give statements at the hearing. Her mom, Veronica, said she doesn't want revenge against Chris or eternal punishment. She wanted him just to take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But let's take it back to Annie.
Mm-hmm.
She had just turned 15 that January.
Oh my gosh, what a baby.
I know. Her mom had taken her to the pet store and she fell in love with the dog there.
Aww.
He was only about a year old and he was about to get or be sent back to the pound for like the third time.
Oh,
I don't know.
No.
If he wasn't adopted, they were going to be sending him back. She loved animals, but she could also relate to the life of this dog. Veronica did get the dog for her.
Aww.
Veronica talked in an interview about how stubborn Annie was. And as frustrating as that could be, she loved that about Annie.
Yeah.
That she didn't give up easily. She would always find a way to figure it out. And she had passion to help other people. She wasn't one to tear others down, but she built them up.
Aww.
And actually, she wanted to be a therapist.
Wow.
Annie's obituary on findagrave.com reads, "Our daughter, Annie, or Anne Grace Kasperzak, was born January 10th, 1997, but it wasn't until years later that she came to meet the people she considers her parents and was adopted into the family that loves her.
Aww.
She was taken from us long before she had a chance to live out her dreams. Annie loved to listen to music and hang out with her friends, as any teen would. She loved her family, and she was a superhero to her little brothers and sister. She had a caring spirit and loved so strongly. She taught us and enriched our lives."
Aww. Oh, it's crushing, especially the upbringing that she had.
Yes.
Because being in and out of the foster, you know, different foster homes and back into the system, yeah, while you're waiting for another placement, there's so much parentification that goes on, mm-hmm, with children that go through that. And they are becoming their own caregiver.
Yes.
They're looking out for themselves. And so, honestly, it does not surprise me that at 15, she, mm-hmm, was ready to start a family.
Yeah.
I mean, because just having gone through that, she was so much more farther along. She was much more independent than your typical 15-year-old. And that's no fault of her own.
No.
And it's no fault of Veronica's, because I mean,
no, Veronica did her best to the life that she deserved.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking.
Yeah. But no, you're right. And I did see on another documentary that, you know, that was her wanting a baby was her way of righting the wrongs of, yeah, what had happened to her. So she could turn it around and make it something.
And she could have her
better,
like a literal family.
Yeah.
Like her own flesh and blood.
Right.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking.
Yeah. And I mean, she didn't deserve what was done to her. She had a life to live, but this young adolescent kid.
So it makes sense.
He couldn't cope with,
right,
his consequences that, and even though it was this made up lie,
yeah,
he didn't want to face what could have been.
Right. Oh, that's so, so terrible.
Yeah.
Poor girl. I hate to hear stories like that. I mean,
yeah.
I almost wish she would have gotten pregnant, because, like, you know, Veronica would have, like, welcomed that baby in, and she would have not wanted to run away. And I think the lie was the shameful part. And, you know, she just couldn't face the lie after her boyfriend found out from her friends.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. But I also have half a mind to think maybe that was part of the plan for Chris, that he could be like, okay, meet me at the bridge and leave a note saying that you're running away and we'll run away, yeah, together.
Yes.
And then they won't come looking for her, because, mm-hmm, she said, don't come looking for me.
Right.
And so I thought maybe he said, write that down. And this was all part of his, yeah, plan.
Well, he did tell what's-his-face Spencer what to say. So,
right,
it would make sense that he coached her as well.
Yeah. I never saw anything that was what happened, but I have a suspicion that,
mm-hmm,
it could have been.
So her note makes a whole lot of sense now, knowing, yeah, everything that we know. Oh, that's so tough.
And tell me why it's always California. I'm running away to California.
Oh, yeah. I'm running away to California. Oh, my gosh. Well, I've been to California. It's a great place. I wanted to run away to California when I was a teenager. Yes. So, yeah, I get it. Oh, Annie, you little angel.
She was so beautiful. Oh, long, dark hair.
Well, rest in peace, Annie. I hope that she's just in heaven, like, you know.
Having fun with all the babies up there.
Yeah, like cuddling all the babies that I lost, you know. So take care of them, Annie.
Yes.
You can be their mama. Well, that was terrible. Yeah. It was not great.
I know.
But let's do it again sometime.
Okay, we will.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.